Welcome back to the Border Patrol live on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John live at Pega's American Family Restaurant in Lenexa on 87th Street, just off 87th and Quivira. Come out here and see me. I'm going to be here on the air for the whole show till 10 a.m. It's 12122 West 87th Street in Lenexa. You can stop by and get $2 off any item on the menu and also sign up to get tickets to the Christian Okoye Celebrity Roast on Sunday. We will roast Tim Gunhard. I'll be up there as the MC, and Nate Bucati and Gary Lezak and Dan Salamua and Steve DeBerg and Mark Collins and more will be roasting, and Will Shields, Hall of Famer Will Shields, will be roasting Tim Grunhard like we've always wanted to on Sunday at Voodoo Lounge at Harris Casino. So stop by and get tickets to that. We'll give them away if you say that you're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB right now. Buster Olney. We will not roast Buster Olney. We will just talk to him about baseball. Good morning, Buster. How are you?
I'm doing great. What's going on?
Buster, it was an emotional couple of days here in Kansas City. First, because Lorenzo Cain comes back for the first time in another uniform, and the Milwaukee Brewers look good, and Lorenzo Cain looks good. I know when it happened, they turned a lot of heads in baseball when they traded for Christian Yelich and they signed Lorenzo Cain. And I know that we talked about maybe expecting them to go out and sign a starting pitcher, and so maybe they're still in the market for that. But Lorenzo Cain looks like he landed in a good spot, and the Brewers are real contenders.
Yeah, hottest team in baseball right now with the way that they're rolling. And look, the other part of that is the fact that the Cubs look like that. They're not such a dynamic team that they're going to run away and hide. When the Cubs won the World Series in 2016. I was definitely among those that looked at that core of young players they had and thought, oh, wow, this could be a team that could, you know, potentially be the first dynasty in 20 years where they could win two or three championships in a period of 4 or 5 years. And you watch them play, and it just doesn't look like it's going to happen. Like, it doesn't look like they're going to have enough consistent pitching. So they look good, and from my perspective from afar, I thought it was one of the coolest things we've seen in baseball this year, the way that the Royals fans responded to Lorenzo Cain. It's not a surprise, based on how the fans responded to Cain and to Hosmer and to Moustakas last summer, the great send-off at the end of the regular season. There have been certainly plenty of situations that we've seen with other teams, and I live here in New York and have seen a lot of players come back to New York and get booed, even after the Yankees or the Mets didn't want the player back, because that's what often happens at Yankee Stadium or Citi Field. But it doesn't happen in Kansas City, and that was awesome. I just absolutely love that when, you know, that video that I saw of when, as Cain rounds third base, he's coming home, and you see fans in Royals T-shirts and caps standing up and cheering for the guy who helped them win a World Series. That's pretty cool.
Certainly is, Buster, but obviously it's not so cool for the Royals right now in terms of the way the season's going. And look, I don't think anything's really changed in that regard from when we talked to you last week. But when you said that about the Cubs, it kind of, some of that was ringing, you know, in my ears about how quickly it things change on you in baseball. I mean, the Royals, yeah, like when they went to back-to-back World Series, they were this young, dynamic, exciting, great defensive team with this lights-out bullpen. And, man, it didn't take long at all for the team to kind of get old and slow and have a terrible bullpen. I mean, it happened fast.
It really does. And there are a lot of different factors. And number one, the pitching. I think that's why the Cubs, it's going to be much more of a slog than maybe we anticipated, because we saw these great young position players, and you thought, okay, if they get the pitching, they'll be fine. Well, you know what? John Lester, as he gets older, he gets less dominant. And Jake Arrieta definitely took a step back before he became a free agent and walked out. They trade for Jose Quintana, who's a terrific pitcher, but he's not a guy who's going to shut down a team in October. And the Cubs, I think, in an effort to, you know, to try to take advantage of this young group, they signed Yu Darvish, and already the talk among executives of other teams is, you know what, is he a guy that you necessarily is going to be a separator? Is he a very upper echelon type starter? Questions about that. And I mean, you look at the Houston Astros, who I think they have a real shot to be the first team since those Yankee teams in the late 90s to go back to back, and yet we're seeing a change in them. you know, they have a great young core of players, and their strikeout rate for their hitters has skyrocketed this year by about 30 to 40%. And one of the folks within that organization told me, look, it's a human instinct. When you accomplish something, you want to get better. And so you have players on that team that maybe they want to just hit more than they did last year, and so they're swinging more, and it changes. And so it'll be interesting to see if the Astros can as the summer goes along, if they can evolve and develop and continue to take advantage of the great pitching they have and actually follow through. Because, man, winning back-to-back titles, you know, developing a dynasty, it's really hard.
All right, Buster, I want to ask you about the next phenom, Ronald Acuna, being called up by the Braves finally. We'll get to that. But first, one more on the Royals. They now, they're done with their two games against the Brewers. Now they'll have a five-game series featuring a doubleheader on coming up now, starting tonight, with the Chicago White Sox. And like, neither of these teams are going to do anything this year. The White Sox are 5-16. The Royals are 5-17. And the Royals are 1-9 at home. And so this is, this might be an ugly five-game series, and really the Royals' last stand to do anything competitive before things really fall apart. But as far as the White Sox, we've already seen them a couple of times against the Royals. Is this what you expected? I know they're supposed to be ahead of the Royals, and they are, as far as rebuilding the farm system and trying to get back to respectability. But is this pretty much what you expected from the White Sox?
I think so. And the fact that there were, you know, moments of hope last year, I think, led to a lot of speculation. Maybe the White Sox would be a factor in the American League Central race this year. I just think their pitching is too young. And that's really what it comes down to most of the time. You know, how evolved is the pitching staff? Rick Hahn, who's their general manager, did a great job in some of the trades that they made. He told reporters in spring that this might be the most difficult year for the White Sox as they go through this rebuilding process. Because you've got a lot of young players and they're trying to win together. They're not close. And, you know, maybe at the end of 2019 they'll start to be more relevant, but they've got a long way to go, absolutely a long way to go.
All right, Stephen mentioned the latest phenom to get called up by the Atlanta Braves, who, by the way, I saw Rustin Dodd pointed out, he nearly ended up with the Royals and his cousins with Alcides Escobar. How good is this kid supposed to be?
Ralph Garr played with the Atlanta Braves with Hank Aaron, and he opened up a lot of eyes in spring training when he, in speaking with a reporter from MLB.com, he compared Acuna to Hank Aaron. And obviously, he's not saying that Acuna is going to hit 755 home runs and be that all-time leader. But when you look at the body and you look at his particular set of skills, and you can understand why Ralph would make that comparison. You know, Acuna is not this big Aaron Judge-type guy. He's a moderate-sized guy. Probably the best physical comparison of a current player would be Andrew McCutchen. And he's got more speed than Andrew McCutchen, and he's got probably more electricity in his bat. And he's someone who, when you talk to evaluators, other teams, and you talk about number one prospects, there are times like when Jurickson Profar was the number one prospect in baseball, you get whispers from other teams, yeah, okay, he's the number one prospect, but he's not really that, you know, much of a separator in the way that Harper and Trout were. This guy's in the Harper and Trout realm in how much of a difference he'll make. Mm. I saw him in spring training and listened to him take batting practice. I say listen because it just makes a different sound. I saw him run to first base. It took your breath away how fast the guy is. And last night in his first game, his first two plate appearances, he blistered line drives, fly balls to center field at 100 miles per hour to right center field as a right-handed hitter. The fact that he, you know, did that in his first at-bats in the big leagues tells you he wasn't over-swinging, that he was relatively calm. He wound up getting his first hit. He wound up scoring a run. It's a pretty exciting time for the Braves because they have a guy who's going to be a superstar for a long time.
All right, Buster, another guy, he was a hot prospect and for a while lived up to it. And we had him, we saw him up close in the 2015 World Series, Matt Harvey.
Wow.
He's been sent to the bullpen, and when he was approached for comment yesterday by the media, He said, no chance. And when asked why, he said, I don't effing want to. I have nothing to say to you guys. So things aren't going very well for Matt Harvey in the Mets. What's happening there?
Yeah, and I kind of hate the fact that we're in an era now where even, you know, a person chooses not to talk to the media, that becomes a story, to be honest with you. I mean, I can't tell you how many times that, you know, walk up to a player and, you know, he's upset about something, personal situation. Maybe he's upset at you, but he says, no, I don't want to talk to you. I don't think that's a story, okay? That in itself. But I do think Matt Harvey is probably in his final days with the Mets because, you know, he's a free agent after this year ends. At the beginning of this year, Mickey Callaway, their manager, Dave Island, the new pitching coach, someone you guys know well, they both met with Matt, and they said, look, we've heard the stories about you in the past, and we're not worried about that. Those don't matter to us. We're just going to try to help you as a pitcher. And they worked with him through spring training. There were some hopeful signs, and the season started, and he just wasn't any good. And his stuff went down, and so he lost his spot in the rotation. And what I'd be concerned about with that exchange with the media yesterday wouldn't be the fact that he decided not to talk to the media. That's his right. I think the bigger concern is he a guy moping around the clubhouse? Which certainly when you read the words and you hear what happened, it's a question that needs to be answered by the Mets. Because if the guy's in his last days with the team anyway, his last year with the team anyway, and he's upset about being moved to the bullpen, if that's his demeanor, I don't want him around. And it probably would be better for Matt to go to some other team and try to you know, rebuild his value. Heck, he'd be great for the Royals, quite frankly, because the Royals could, you know, try to rehabilitate him, try to get him to turn it around, and if he pitches well for them for a couple months, he might have some value in the trade market.
Well, and certainly you don't get blown up in the media here if you don't talk. You know, there's a lot of guys in the Royals clubhouse that don't really want to, and they just kind of make sure they're not even around when the media is in the clubhouse,
right,
and nobody ever sees them, and nobody in this town really cares too much. But isn't that New York, Buster? I mean, I was always told, I remember Joe McEwing used to always tell me when he played with the Mets, I asked him how hard the media was there, and he said, look, if you show up and answer their questions on your worst day, they will treat you fairly, they will treat you well. But if you dodge them on your worst day, they will light you up for it. And if guys can figure that out, they'll do fine in the New York media. And hasn't Harvey had a lot of problems with the media over the years in New York?
He's definitely gone through a lot of ups and downs. And I think Joe was dead on in his assessment. I actually think that, and I've heard this from a number of players, they say that really that the New York media is fair. It's tough. But if you show up and you answer questions, then they'll respect you for that. And, you know, that might be what's in there are times in Boston, for example, where it feels personal, some mm-hmm. of the stuff. In New York, it's all about performance. But Matt has certainly, and, you know, his stuff off field has been well documented, and he's had some issues there. And look, the guy's come back from some significant injuries, and it just might be that his stuff is not the same, and he might be fed up. And I do. I mean, not only from the team perspective, have to ask the question, is it time to turn the page and to move on? I think Matt probably is at the point where, you know what, it just hasn't worked here. Maybe if I need to go and try to pitch and try to get better and try to bounce back from the injuries that I had, it might be better to try to make that work in a different market, in a different setting, as opposed to a place where now I've sort of squandered the benefit of the doubt from the media because of the times that I refused to talk.
Buster Olney is our guest, right? Buster, we've talked about this guy quite a bit, and I'm still amazed at what's happening with Justin Verlander. So now I guess he's up to 16 starts as a member of the Astros between the regular season and the postseason. 107 innings, 59 hits, 18 runs, which works out to a 1.50 ERA, 129 strikeouts and 19 walks, and he's only allowed over two earned runs. He's only allowed three earned runs twice, and that's the most he's given up in any of those starts. I mean, to tell you, for the people that were even somewhat optimistic about Verlander, or really optimistic, nobody could have possibly saw this coming. It's like he's better than he's ever been before. What is going on?
Yeah, and I've gotten to know Justin pretty well through the years. I've done a lot of different stories with him, talked to him through his evolution as a pitcher. And a couple things really stuck out to me when I did a long piece on him back in 2011. First off, he's the only player that I've ever talked to, and I asked the question, what do you want to accomplish in your career? His answer was, I want to do everything I can to get to the Hall of Fame. I mean, made no bones about it relatively early in his career that that's what his goal was, make the Hall of Fame. And the second thing was, his big hero in life as a player is Nolan Ryan. And the reason why he loved Nolan Ryan was because he respected the fact that through his entire career, Nolan Ryan did what he had to do to maintain himself as a power pitcher. And Justin is following the exact same arc. And it's really tough because, you know, he had some physical issues a few years ago. He had surgery on his core. He lost fastball velocity. And there are real questions about whether or not he could get back. And during the postseason last year, I did an interview with him, and I asked him, you know, how did you regain your velocity? And he talked about all this study that he had done about stretching and Pilates, and he learned about his body as he came back from those injuries. And in a spring training game, he threw a fastball, and it felt good to him. He turned around, and he looked at the radar gun, and the gun said 95 miles per hour. And as Justin told me this story, he said, look, I'm getting goosebumps right now thinking about that moment, because what it told him was, it's still in there. I still have it. And so between the physical work that he's done and the adjustment he made in the last 3 years and using scouting reports in a way that he never before, because he'd always just bullied hitters, he has continued to evolve as he's gotten older. So he doesn't throw 100 miles per hour anymore, but he throws a pretty good 96, 97. He uses all of his pitches. To me, if his career stopped today, he would be a Hall of Famer.
Buster, one of the things we've talked about with you over the past few years has been the trend of strikeouts in baseball, where hitters, like, you know, you've told us that teams don't care if their players strike out at the plate, yet they value strikeouts by pitchers more than ever, which it's like a compounding effect in. If you keep getting more pitchers to throw strikeouts and you tell hitters, we don't care if you strike out, so it's not a problem if you do. They keep setting records. Every year, Major League Baseball sets a new record with strikeouts. And this year, I read from Jeff Passan that Major League Baseball is on pace for 43,163 strikeouts, which would be 11,000 more strikeouts than in 2008. Is this good for baseball? I mean, just watching two guys swing, or, you know, a guy throw the ball and another guy swing and miss while everyone else stands around that often, is that a problem for baseball?
I think it is. I think it's terrible because, you know, baseball, which is why I think you're hearing a lot from the commissioner about pace of play, about actual action, because they don't want to have these long stretches in games where it's, I mean, let's face it, you know, my son played Little League. We've all been around Little League games. We love the kids, and it's a colossal bore at times to watch. When you get the 12-year-old who's striking out everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even for the players, I think it can be boring. And that's more and more what we're seeing. I really do wonder, as we go through this time in baseball, where teams are encouraging hitters to, you know, lift the ball, get the ball in the air, do damage. Part of that conversation at some point also has to be about, okay, you can do that on the first and second strike, but when you get to two strikes, there needs to be an adjustment. There needs to be an effort to put the ball in play. I don't think it's a coincidence that the teams that strike out the least seem to win the World Series. The Royals did it.
Mm-hmm.
The Astros did it last year. The best team in baseball so far this year has been the Boston Red Sox. They're last in strikeouts. I don't get it. You know, and I had a conversation recently with Jeff Bannister, manager of the Rangers. He's very passionate about this topic. He doesn't mind the fact that hitters are trying to hit home runs, but it drives him crazy when they just swing as hard as they can and try to hit home runs with two strike situations. And he looked at me, again, this is someone with a lot of passion, and he goes, you know what, first two pitches, that's your at-bat. You get to two strikes, that at-bat belongs to the team, and you need to do what you can for the team to put the ball in play, to put pressure on the defense, to make yourself matter as opposed to just taking a ridiculous swing and striking out.
Buster Olney has been our guest. All right, Buster, as always, we appreciate your time. Hopefully we'll see some better baseball out of the Royals against the White Sox in this five-game series.
Yeah.
And we will talk with you next week, sir.
Okay, guys, have fun.
Steven.
that is Buster only. Yes, sir.
You know, you're talking about this this Ronald Acuna, and we hear from Buster about, you know, the elite type prospect he is now that he's getting called up. Rustin Dodd did a great piece on him in The Athletic and talked about how Alcides Escobar brought him into spring training for the Kansas City Royals back when he was just a 16-year-old, 5'10", about 150 pounds, you know, rail thin kid. And I give Rene Francisco, who's done a tremendous job. I mean, I think Rene Francisco might be one of the most unsung heroes of the Royals building the World Series team. He was the guy that was brought in to head up the Latin American scouting by Dayton Moore when he took over here, and he's responsible for guys like Salvador Perez and Yordano Ventura, you know, being signed as amateur free agents from Latin America. But I like the honesty here. He said, look, they looked at him. They you know, Alcides Escobar's telling him, hey, this kid's going to be really good. You got to watch him. And Francisco said to Rustin Dodd, our scouts liked him, but we never thought honestly that he was going to be this kind of a player. The kid was 5'10", about 150 pounds. He made contact, but we didn't see any raw power. And now, just a few years later, you know, he fills out and is, you know, Alcides Escobar says this kid's going to be an all-star in a very short period of time, and Buster says it too. This goes to show, I mean, you know what? They got Yordano Ventura when he was a rail-thin kid. Nobody knew he was going to become a kid that could throw 100 miles per hour. Some of it's just about the way guys develop. But isn't that crazy to think that he was, oh, he was in spring training with the Kansas City Royals, and now he's a 20-year-old phenom that 6 foot tall, 180 pounds, got power. You know, he's being compared to Andrew McCutchen and guys like that. Ouch.
I mean, I don't think it's that crazy. It reminds me of the story of when Chad Boga and Union Broadcasting hired you. You were rail thin.
Yep.
I mean, you looked almost sickly. You were known as the wingman for Brooks Melchior in several hot spots around town. And you showed up here.
Orlando's, most specifically.
Wow. Yeah. Absolutely. And they signed you to a deal. And now, like Acuna, you've really filled out.
Yep,
and we feel like you've progressed
about 180 pounds now.
I don't know if Jake agrees with that, but I think are striking to me.
When they brought him in, I was like, oh, we got a new intern. Like, no, this is
right,
maybe
look at
kidding.
This guy.
Yeah,
remember I went up to the other hill. Hey, youngster, how are you?
I was like, hey, little guy.
Like, says, take your dad to work day.
What? Yeah. Yeah, here's some candy for you.
Yeah,
and then I don't.
Hey, we go get me a coffee.
He gave me a noogie.
And a wedgie.
Yeah.
That was like last week, though.
Yeah.
That's
what
it
was.
That was not too long ago. Okay, nah. So, and yes, that was, I will, whenever I feel bad about that story, though, I will look up Khalil Lee's stats, and hopefully that will make me feel better. But I will tell you this, if you want to feel better, come out and have a delicious breakfast or brunch or lunch or whatever you want to eat.
If you're 150 pounds and you'd like to get up to 180 pounds and have some more raw power, maybe you should come eat at Pegas.
It's a good
load up on
step.
The eggs.
Yeah. Some pork chops and eggs.
Someone send Whit Merrifield out here.
Yeah.
Just, 20 eggs, please.
Please.
Pegas American Family Restaurant. I'm here until 10 o'clock. We are live in Lenexa. It is 12122 West 87th, not too far off 87th and Quivira. And you can get $2 off any item on the menu if you mention Sports Radio 810. And that's good at all four Pegas locations. And all day long, you can go to Pegas.com, P-E-G-A-H-S.com. For all the locations and to view their delicious menu. But stop by here and see me. You get $2 off any item on the menu. And you can get something, a nice prize for free. That's, well, most prizes are free. But either a gift certificate to use for Sherry's Berries or Pro Flowers to get something for the mama in your life. Or you can get tickets to the Christian Okoye Celebrity Roast that takes place this Sunday at Voodoo Lounge, where we will roast Tim Grunhard. You can sign up for those, and you can get a 2-pack or a 4-pack, whatever you want. We got you. All you got to do is see Kyle and say, hey, man, what up? And so stop by and see us at Pegas in Lenexa, 12122 West 87th. And also, Michael, the Northland intern, happy to give you a dirty look if you come within 5 feet of them. So we've got that going on at Pegas American Family Restaurant. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.